Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Recruiting Animal here. It's me back with you again. Let me say first that if you have a question about telephone sourcing, Maureen Cherub and Pam Simon are going to be here at 1 p.m. to answer all of your questions on the Talk Sourcing show. But right now, it's my turn to speak, and I want to tell you something. After the last week's show with the Minnesota Headhunter, I got a huge amount of mail. I always get mail, but this was special. But as usual, not all of it was positive. A lot of people thought I was too hard on the Minnesota Headhunter. I'm going to read you the very best complaint. Here it is. I think it was published online. Some people seek power because it puts them in a position to humiliate others. The role of bully obviously feeds their need for dominance. Take, for example, Mr. Recruiting Animal's rude treatment of the Minnesota Headhunter on the Recruiting Animal show. Instead of being a kind and comforting host, the animal clings to a tough guy image that belongs to the Stone Age. Nice, eh? But let me tell you this. At Starbucks, every morning, they play a song by Stevie Wonder that says, "There's a place in the sun, and it's there for everyone. Gonna find me that place in the sun." That's a beautiful thought, isn't it? I certainly think so. But you know what? There's no place in the sun if you're afraid of getting burned. That's obvious, isn't it? Sooner or later, you gotta step out of the shadows, and sometimes that means you're gonna have to take some heat. And who knows that better than recruiters? If you go to an interview, you'd better have your basic statements honed to a very fine edge in advance, so when you say something, everyone knows exactly what you mean. So when someone comes on this show and can't make himself clear immediately, I'm doing him a favor by forcing him to clarify what he's trying to say. And let me tell you as well, the Minnesota Headhunter is one terrific guy. He's a real American, and Americans like to stand on their own two feet. They don't like to be mollycoddled, so they can take anything a guy like me has to dish out and more. And as for the Minnesota Headhunter, I'm quite sure that a guy like that knows that the more ferocious I am, the better it's going to be for him. But listen to me. I'm a nice guy. I want to please my audience, so occasionally I'll make a few concessions to popular taste. And today, as a concession, I've invited a Canadian to the show. Mark Newman is the CEO of HireVue.com, the video interview company. And he's from Timmins, Ontario. It's famous as the hometown of Shania Twain and the Cowboy Junkies. Although he told me he doesn't know who the Cowboy Junkies are. That's another story. Now, I want to tell you something about Canadians. Canadians like to see themselves as nice guys. We are trained from childhood to think that we're better than Americans because we're peacekeepers, not peacemakers. Now, you know that's self-serving baloney, but still, I gave Mark, a Canadian, a choice as to what style of interview he wants. Animal-like or Lethal Weapon 5, and he told me he'd like to think about it and make up his mind once we got onto the show. So let's see what he's got to say, but I'm going to warn you in advance, Mark. Canadian or not, there's no way I'm going to let you be boring, because in case you didn't know it, nice guy or not, I'm still a recruiting animal, and this is a Recruiting Animal Show!
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to Daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine fizz and hattie, I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to Daddy.
Mark Newman, are you there?
I am.
I got Marilyn Monroe for you. Pretty nice, eh?
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Listen, I didn't ask you one. What did you want to say?
I have to say your cheery makes me sound like Don Cherry.
Oh, Don Cherry. Most maybe I don't know if the people know who that is, but you know, there's something I forgot to ask you. Do you want to do the interview in French?
Yeah, not today.
Il y a beaucoup de Canadiens français en Timmins, n'est-ce pas?
Un petit peu, but it's not as.
Yeah, that wasn't an answer to my question. Okay, you don't want to do it in French because you don't speak French, even though you claim to be from Timmins. Okay, I got another question for you. You're just a little pisher, aren't you? You're a member of Gen Y, right?
I'd have to say so, yeah.
Yeah? Now, let me ask you a question. Does that mean that you're a spoiled little brat or a member of the master race? Because I've read all the publicity on Gen Y, and I still don't know what's going on. Is there anything special about being a Gen Y leader? Because you are the CEO of a company.
Yeah. No, I've been – I don't think there's – Well, here. Let me
Can you talk louder? Hey, how come didn't I tell you to get a good phone, talk right into the phone?
Is that better?
No.
Okay.
Can anybody else hear him?
I hear him fine.
You can hear him, Dave?
Yep.
Okay. 541, yep. Can you hear what he's saying?
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Okay, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay, that's better.
All right.
Okay,
yeah.
So Gen Y, you want to tell me something about it?
Yeah, Gen Y, I mean, the whole millennials generation, it's made me feel ashamed. I mean, frankly, with helicopter parents and that whole thing going on, you know, it makes me embarrassed for what's going on in my generation. I mean, I've seen enough, as a role in Hireview, I've seen enough, hilarious email addresses that people think are fun and cool applying for jobs and what have you. You know, for myself, I kind of... had it the harder way where I had to put myself through school and did that, and now here I am.
Is that because I know you're living in Utah now. Is that because you were discriminated against because you're a Canadian? No one will give you a job or you know?
Yes, there's a hatred against Canadians here in Utah. No, I'm just kidding.
So this whole Gen Y thing is a hoax as far as you're concerned, or do you take the point of view that, you know, Gen Y is inferior, not superior, but inferior?
I'd say it's different, not necessarily inferior. And, you know, as employers, as recruiters, as, you know, bosses, managers, you name it, we're going to have to really figure out a way to work with this generation.
Yeah, okay. I don't understand what you're saying either, but we'll move on then. Okay, Mark. Now, you're the CEO of Hireview, Hireview. Why did you spell view like that? Is that because you're from Timmins? I don't know. I could never figure it out.
Yeah, no, that isn't that how you spell it? No, I'm just kidding.
Biew, that's how I spell it.
Well, you know, at the time, we couldn't get the domain. We own it now, but
okay, that's the answer. Okay, I'm going to cut you off. Okay, give us the 1 minute introduction to your business, the elevator speech version. Let's start off there.
All right. Yeah, Hireview is basically TiVo for the job interview.
TiVo for the job interview. Now, that's a riddle. I don't know what that means.
We do recorded video job interviews. Basically,
yep.
if you have time zones and schedules in the way of any hiring process, which usually there is, we can make it so that your candidates can interview on their own time. All their video responses get recorded into the system for review later by you, your recruiters, and your manager friends.
Okay. So what you do is somebody has a bunch of candidates. You send those candidates webcams, and I think they're very easy to use, right?
Yep. Oh, definitely.
Okay. And then they go to your site. They plug in the webcam, go to your site, enter a code, and then the site walks them through a tutorial to set up and test the camera, and then what happens?
And then the interview starts. The first question comes up on the screen. They get 30 seconds to read the question and up to 3 minutes to respond. Hit stop recording when they're finished that one and go on to the next question.
They stop recording or it stops recording?
Well, they stop recording as soon as they're done giving their answer. They have up to 3 minutes to give their answer for.
Okay, and so they have to start the recording when the next question comes up, or do they time that themselves?
Well, it's all automated, so it's a red, yellow, and green light. So
okay.
So I'm sitting here, first question comes up on the screen. It's red for 20 seconds, yellow for 10, green it starts recording. So
okay.
I have 30 seconds to think of my answer. Then I start giving my answer. After about a minute, I'm done my answer. hit stop recording, and then I click next to go on to the next question. And the
okay, but
starts.
What if they don't? What if they get nervous and they want to calm down? Can they click next a half hour later?
Yeah, they can take a break in the middle. It will time them out if they do that for half an hour, but they can take a few minutes break just to get a glass of water, go to the bathroom, whatever it might
now,
be.
Now, if they get timed out, what happens? They have to start all over again?
They have to start all over again. We get notified, and, you know, it's checked on a case-by-case
basis.
Doesn't
look good for them, right?
Right. You know, if they get timed out, it's kind of a question. We can see when they start their interview to when they finish or when they get kicked out. So.
Okay. So to sort of get some of the technical stuff out of the way for people, what kind of system requirements does a candidate need for something like that?
Well, a computer that's less than 8 years old. We have it running on literally Pentium 2 machines.
Yeah, really?
Yep, an internet connection, a fast dial-up, slow DSL will do the job. You know, ideally you have a DSL connection or greater.
Uh-huh.
And then a webcam, and you can use your own webcam, you know, we also provide the service that we ship out the webcam in an employer-branded package. So.
Okay, so when you say it's an employer-branded package, does that mean the package will say Company X or the webcam actually has that on it?
Yeah, webcam isn't branded at this point, but the package, we call them candidate love packages.
Uh-huh.
We've sent out to candidates these packages with our camera and our instructions and a letter from HireVue, but also letters from managers, DVDs, brochures, you know, swag that they give away at conferences, you name it. And it says,
is that
you know,
a special, is that how Austin Powers or someone says it, swag?
I guess so. Yeah. No, I don't know. That's what I was.
I thought it was swag. Okay.
Swag, I guess. Yeah, swag.
Swag.
Sorry
swag.
About that. And okay. And so we include whatever they want in that package and send it to the candidate.
Okay. Now, you guys actually, though, you give tech support to the candidates as well. In case, you know, I think you told me before that any moron can handle the setup of this camera, but some people can't handle it.
Well, I didn't use moron, but anytime we bring in something.
Oh, was that my addition? Sorry.
Yeah, no, every time we bring in something new, I test it with my mother. And if
uh-huh.
she can figure it out.
Anybody, jeez, I hope she's not listening.
No. If she can figure it out, anybody can. And, you know, we provide tech support. We want to make sure the candidates have a great experience because if you think about it, our candidates are our next customers. If they get hired as a manager and they had a miserable experience, when it's their turn to hire, they're not going to use HireVue.
You know what? I'm actually getting email from the audience out there. They're saying you have to talk louder.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
He's also saying, what's the cost? But we're going to get to that, pal. I got to tell you something. That person who emailed me is the same person who told me my introduction last week was too darn long. But I have to tell you something. If Barack Obama would have given the exact same speech, people would be telling me it was a work of art. I didn't want to mention that in the introduction, but it's true. So anyway, go on. Go ahead. Okay, why not answer the guy's question? How much does it cost?
Well, it costs there's three levels.
Louder. He asked louder, and I believe he's right. You gotta talk right into that mic.
All right. Basically, there's three levels. There's the level where we don't send out a webcam and the camera's set up in a recruiter's office or at a candidate's home or college career center. It's $19.95 a candidate.
Really?
When we ship out a webcam to the candidate anywhere in the U.S., it's $149 a candidate.
Uh-huh.
And if we ship it out anywhere in the world, it's $199 a candidate.
Okay.
And we ship them everywhere.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
Well, and people buy these in a package, right? Because they're going to interview more than one candidate, right?
Exactly. They buy 10, 50, 100, 500, whatever they need. Or whatever
really?
They need.
Okay.
Yep.
But let's say a search, the average search I'm going to say has five candidates tops. But even say, let's say 10 candidates. If they've all got their webcams, which is unlikely, it's going to cost them $200. If none of them have webcams, it's still only going to be $1,500, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's pretty cheap. I would agree. Would you agree?
Oh, hey, I agree. I mean, you.
Okay, you're the boss. Anybody else want to comment on that? I know the Kingfish is there, Dave Manister from ERE. There's a couple of other people as well. Anybody want to talk to Mark before I go on? No? Can somebody say no? Just say no, okay? You called into the show. There's got to be a reason. No.
You're asking all the right questions, Michael.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. The other two are are shy people. Okay, I won't force them to identify themselves. Just keep listening. Okay, so Mark, the thing we haven't got about is the logic. As a recruiter, I have a basic mistrust of this idea, but what you told me sort of puts me at ease a bit. These are really only used for pre-screening. You use these after actually a phone screen, then you'll give the candidate the video screen to decide if you're going to fly them in, if he or she is at a remote location. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's generally where we fit in. I mean, you want to screen the person, make sure that you take out the candidates that really don't fit or aren't interested. And then at that point, it's pretty much like an insurance policy. See your candidates, see more candidates before deciding who to bring in face-to-face.
Okay, an insurance policy, so you don't bring any losers in when it's going to cost a few thousand dollars to do so. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You want to make sure you're spending your time and money with the right candidate.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I mean, I visited your site. I encourage everybody to go to hireview.com. There's a very detailed introduction with sample videos, right?
Yeah, well, no, we have everything password protected, so unfortunately, yeah, we don't have a demo.
There's
right
no sample
there.
I thought there was a sample. I know there's information to download, but I thought.
Right. Well, you can go
see.
Through that virtual demo. It shows you the whole process, shows you how everything works. But
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to see some real interviews, just give us a call.
Okay, but in a one of the things it says there that you know these really let you know what the candidate's like. Looking at sort of automated questions, talking in, you know, a non-actor, talking into a little video machine, really, how authentic a picture are you going to get?
You actually get a very authentic picture. A lot of our clients, when they first start out with us, they're a little unsure. You know what I mean? They have a very – basically, the candidates they use with HireView, a lot of times they fly in just because they're unsure of their decision. After a couple times using us, though, they know that they can trust their gut when they evaluate a candidate on HireView, just the same as they meet the person face-to-face. You can really get a lot about the candidate, especially if you go with some behavior-based questions earlier in the process. So if culture is really important to your team and how they'll fit in with as a candidate, if technical skills, you know, tell us about a programming project you worked on.
Okay, let me interrupt you here. But you're doing a phone screen already. What does this add to the phone screen?
Well, it shows how they present themselves, how they carry themselves, how they communicate,
Well, they're already communicating with you on the phone screen, right?
Right. But, I guarantee as a recruiter, you've done a phone screen with someone, and you had a perception of them in the sense of, yeah, I think they'll be a good candidate. I think they'll be a good fit. And then either you meet them or you send them on to the company, shows up at the company, and they're like, Michael, why'd you send this guy over to us?
Usually trust my gut that, especially if I'm calling people at a certain level, that they are professional looking and they know how to handle themselves as well. I'm going to say that a small minority are visual surprises. So
right.
Anyway,
well,
that's my opinion. Anybody else got an opinion? Anybody on the in the peanut gallery who's had an experience like that? No? Okay. Just giving you all a chance. Okay, next question. Sorry, did you want to say something, Mark?
That's fine.
Okay, I think you told me that you've done it in 55 states, right?
Almost all 50 states and 55 countries.
Oh, okay. Which countries?
I can start listing them off, but this week we've been doing them in Belgium, Haiti, Argentina, Brazil, France.
Do they have jobs
Canada.
In Haiti?
Evidently they do, actually. It's a lot of times for those jobs, it's from not NGOs, non-governmental organizations, charity organizations.
Really? And how would an NGO find out about you?
Through, websites, and obviously we're starting to do a bit more targeting. As I told you, we're just finally starting to do some marketing, and we know where there's a good market. And so a lot of times it's word of mouth, though, and referrals. I mean, I'd say 90% of our business has come from word of mouth and referrals. And
really?
So
the viral marketing is what you guys do best. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it sells itself, but it doesn't really sell itself. It introduces itself fairly well, and people find out about it, right?
Right, exactly.
Without you doing anything.
Yeah, people can find out about us. You know, then of course we're competing against tradition. So getting projects in place, you know, that takes some legwork.
Okay, hold on. They find out about you, but that doesn't mean that they're sold on you. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, they're sold on the concept. But if you think about it, going to a client saying, "Hey, I want to use this video interview," they're like, "Well, I've been doing phone screens and flying people in for about 20 years. You know, let's just stick with my usual process." But more and more, you know, there's innovators and believers on the front end, and we have a lot of those and a lot of case studies and references for it. So now we're really getting a lot of traction in kind of the broad market that people mm-hmm. say, "Oh, if so-and-so uses you, obviously they trust you. We should use you too."
Give us a couple examples of so-and-so. You got them on your website. Tell the people what they are.
Yeah, Rio Tinto, world's second largest mining company, uses us. Oracle uses us for recruiting globally. Google was one of our first customers.
Uh-huh.
Whirlpool uses us for some college recruiting.
Uh-huh.
And then we have mom-and-pop recruiting shop on the loan. You know, a lot of small, you know, one- or two-person recruiting firms use us also.
Okay, I will come to that after because I'm really interested in the third-party recruiters as a separate category of client.
Mm-hmm.
I was really surprised to find that they use you. So these big companies use you. I've actually done work internationally for some of these big mining firms, and you know, I had to call people in Armenia and China and all over the world. So I can understand how these might be useful. Can you give us an example, though? You said, for instance, you can get a good idea of who somebody is with certain behavioral questions. So I'm going to ask you for some examples of the questions. But first I want to know, what kind of jobs are you talking about? Let's say for Rio Tinto, what kind of jobs were they hiring for?
We've been used on process engineers, metallurgical engineers, to finance people and accountants. We've been used really across the board. A great international example is the Inter-American Development Bank. They're like a world bank, and they're using us for the director of green initiatives on their different continents they do business. And their headquarters are here in Washington, D.C., and they built an interview with questions about, you know, how do you work in a team, tell us an example of a project that went well, tell us about what would you change, tell us about a project that didn't go well, what went wrong, what would you change, you know, really questions that are directly related to the job, where you're dealing with projects that need to get grant funding, that need to do, you know, a number of elements there in order to be successful. Traditionally, they flew in tons of candidates from all over the world. They had multiple evaluators from Brazil, Argentina, the U.S., France, you know, and they had to coordinate all these schedules and all these candidates to meet each other and speak with each other. They decided to try HireVue out. And in 2 weeks, we collected interviews from 15 countries, from, you know, 70 candidates around the world. Everything was just stored in one place, and the managers logged in at their own time, and they said, "Listen, let's move forward with these 20 candidates for face-to-face interviews for, you know, 8 positions," or whatever the number was.
Okay, so this is the real key. It's the scheduling issue, because I know as a recruiter, they tell us they're in a rush. Then we find one person, maybe send them in, and there's a delay between when they can schedule. Let's say even if we get 3 people, we want to set them all up. If there's a panel that has to interview the people, especially till they get their schedule together and the candidates are available, there can be a big problem. In fact, I recruited somebody in Vancouver once, which not everybody down there knows, but it's 3,000 miles away from Toronto.
Isn't it next door? I mean, I thought it was like, you know.
I got a call from a friend of ours. He said, "Hey, Animal, I'm in Canada. Want to go for coffee?" He was in Vancouver. Okay? So no joke. And I told somebody else down there in the States what happened. I thought they'd laugh. No, they didn't get it. Anyway, that's another story. But this candidate came to Toronto, and she was really, I think, almost the only person in the country who could do this job. I really felt proud of myself that I found her. They had a policy that they had 3 people had to interview the candidate. So she came here. Only 2 people could see her that day. She was on her way to Ottawa for some other testing or something like that. And so she almost didn't get hired. In fact, the first time around, they didn't hire her because they were very bureaucratic, and she couldn't see all the required people. And about a month later, they put it together again and flew her in, and she got hired because it was no question about it. But scheduling was a huge issue. So with you guys, you send out the videos, people do them at home in their the privacy of their own home, and then you send them all in, and do they all get, like, let's say you have six candidates, will they all arrive at the same time?
Yeah, so it depends on the company. Some companies want candidates for them to be notified as candidates come in, just so they know, okay, who got on it, who took it quickly, you know, different things like that. Some companies just want them all presented at the same time. It really depends on the situation, the client, and the relationship.
Okay, but if they have a panel of people who have to see them, right? They can send, let's say, in my case, this woman would have her stuff would have gone out to, she wouldn't even have to come to Toronto to begin with. Her videos could have been sent out to all three people, and even if there were six candidates, all three interviewers would have got a whole bunch of videos at the same time, right?
Exactly. Your 1 month or 2 month hiring process plus your search would have been 2 weeks tops.
Okay. Well, I don't know about the search itself. The hiring, finding those people is one story, but once you got them, putting them through the system. And I think you told me something else that's significant. If they've got the video interviews, they won't forget about the first candidate by the time they see the last one, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, one of the biggest things is if you're going through six candidates and you interview them over the course of 2 or 3 weeks because of schedules and time zones and the like, you can't remember who is who. You can't remember who's Michael, who's Mark, who's David. And so a lot of times what we find with our clients is that they screen the interviews, they remember who's who, then they say, okay, let's bring these guys forward for a face-to-face interview. And 9 times out of 10, if you talk to them or, you know, they ask you a question or whatever, they're actually reviewing the interviews right before the candidates come back in. So they know who that is when they walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get past the chit-chat, getting to know each other, and it's like, oh, hey, Michael, how are you? Yeah, I saw your interview, you know, and you can dive right into that face-to-face
interview. Okay, actually, and the candidate has a chance to – you told me that when the candidate does the interview, that the company sometimes presents a video of their own that introduces the candidates to the company. Is that right?
Yep, a manager can record a video of themselves if they want to. Or we can upload a corporate video. So, for instance, MGM Mirage has uploaded their corporate video into the system.
How often does the manager actually put in a video?
I'd actually say it's more likely the manager does it than the company uploads a video.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, the industry of like the corporate video development industry, that's obviously growing a ton. You know, there's a ton of companies out there that do it. But people are buying them and still trying to figure out what to do with them. And so you find a lot more often, you know, people have a webcam and they record a little message from themselves. So before you start your interview, you know, you see a message from the manager and talking about the company, why you should want to work for him and giving the value proposition. Then there's also the opportunity for a video at the end that says, hey, thank you for your time. I'll review this as soon as I can, you know, and get back to you. And here's the next steps in the process.
So they try hard to make it a positive candidate experience.
Definitely. Oh, candidate experience is number one.
Okay. Well, I would say it's you know, lots of candidates would be very nervous doing. They're not used to doing it as well. And there's a concern, I think, that they would have that any mistakes they made are etched in stone. I mean, once they record themselves, you know, like they're forever, isn't it?
Well, you know, with candidates, we do a couple of things. One, when we call each one of the candidates that we send a webcam to. Put them at ease, help them get
a little louder, please. A little loud. You got to shout a bit.
Yeah, we call every candidate that we send a webcam to.
Yeah.
And put them at ease and really kind of handle them, get them interested in the process, and also tell them, listen, I guarantee you've never done a video interview before. Except actually last week we had the first time that a candidate's taken a video interview twice for a job at different companies.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we say, you know, you've probably never taken a video interview. It will be awkward the first question or two, but just sit back, relax, and we really try to be there for them. Companies, our clients who use us and who use any video interview provider, they know, you know, take the first question or two with a grain of salt. I mean, the candidate's just getting rolling. Just get comfortable. So they throw some softball questions out at them. And then we suggest, you know, at the end of the interview, make sure to include an open-ended question of, you know, is there anything else that you missed or would like to say or, you know, anything that you'd like to change, et cetera, just to try to put them at as much ease as possible. But at the end of the day, when you talk to people, everyone always says, if you ask them how their job interview went, they say, oh, it went okay. They don't want to jinx themselves. They don't want to, you know, do anything like that. And so that's the reaction that...
So you don't get a lot of complaints from the candidates?
We really don't. People said, hey, you know, I was nervous, but I guess it went okay because I got advanced in the hiring process, you know, or whatever it might be.
Well, what about the guys who struck out? What if they think they did a lousy job? Do they ever ask you, hey, how long's that video I did going to be kicking around?
Well, yeah, in that case, you know, we get questions when the candidates talk to us beforehand. They usually say, oh, you know, is this private? Is this secure? Which it all is. Everything is username, password protected. You're never going to see our video on YouTube. And it's online for 2 years inside of a company account, but companies...
But it's on your servers. The company never really actually gets the video. Is that right?
Exactly. It's all just streamed from our servers.
Okay. And so they can't, like, pass it around.
Exactly.
They can pass the link around within the company. Is that sort of it? So
right.
To your...
We have safeguards. It's all username and password-based, not just open links. And we have a number of safeguards in place that if a username and password is being pinged 10 times at once or, you know, whatever it is, that we get alerted to shut it down.
So if you get a renegade manager and he thinks you're really hilarious or something like that, he can't send it out to all his friends on Facebook or something and say, take a look at this bozo.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to be in a Lexi Werner video resume from UBS. Our video will never be on YouTube.
No, not that it will be on YouTube, but he can't give out the link and the password and stuff to 100 friends.
Right, exactly.
You'll find out that that's being accessed too many times. Is that right?
Yeah, we monitor our traffic quite carefully just because we want to provide that extra level of security to our clients that they won't find other places.
Okay, and also so that it's only kept there for 2 years, after which the company doesn't have access to it anymore. Is that right?
Right. Unless they contract with us differently, it's kept there for 2 years, and that's to go along with OFCCP and EEOC record-keeping requirements.
Mm-hmm.
If they want it less, totally up to them. You know, they obviously contract with us for it, and they can also archive it in the meantime to basically clear up their account, but it's still available online.
Okay. And I think if they like, you got three candidates, you like all of them, but you have to make a choice. You got the other two guys there. They still have access to look at them again if other positions come up that they'd like to consider them for. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Does that happen?
All the time. Our clients use this for pipelining all the time. I mean, say they have three great candidates, one can start immediately, the other two can't start for a couple of months. Well, great, now they can, you know, they mark that and they review it. But also, yeah, they go back in time and say, listen, we only had one position open. We can only hire one person at the time. But, hey, we need another process engineer. And Michael, he was just great. Let's go back and review it and see if he's interested in taking the job now.
Okay, I'm going to ask one more question, then ask the peanut gallery if they want to ask anything. Now, I think you told me, let's say at the beginning, the company can show their little video, but they can also ask you to complete written questions or multiple choice questions or whatever online as well. Is that right?
Yeah, the interview, it has the video questions, which is our core, but you can also put in essay questions, short answer questions, multiple choice and multiple selection.
Okay, I'm wondering, is that a way to test somebody's technical skills?
It has been used as that. It's also been used to get writing samples. Can this person communicate in writing? Can they write, you know, we have questions like, how would you respond to this customer inquiry? What programming languages are you familiar with? You know, and you select a bunch of different ones. What shifts can you work? You know, the questions can be used pretty dynamically.
Okay. Anybody in the audience right now, the call-in audience, who wants to ask Mark a question?
This is Maureen. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, Maureen, you're here. Okay, fine.
Wow, the voice behind the legend, Maureen. It's a pleasure.
You get so many compliments. I can't believe it. Here, I'll play your music. Hold on.
Scanning through the bathroom window.
Enough. Okay, answer his question.
I love Joe Cocker.
Ask your question.
I'm wondering how you got the word out about this, how you got out front with this in your marketing.
Didn't you listen before?
No, actually.
I might have missed that part. I apologize.
HireVue will do anything that we can to support, the days of recruiting.com, ERE, you know, all your organizations, we are so grateful because all of our marketing has been from, you know, word of mouth referrals and also, you know, from free press that we've got and coverage in, on blogs, on, you know, we're in USA Today and Time and New York Post, but that was all from, you know, people finding us on ERE, I believe, originally. And
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, we're actually very grateful for all the coverage we've ever got. And
how long have you been in existence? I may have missed that too, Michael. I apologize.
How long? This April will be our third year of doing interviews.
Wow.
And
you really moved.
And so and then 3.5 years.
And all
years.
That came from through exposure?
Maureen, did
yeah.
he set you up to ask these questions and sound so
No,
enthusiastic?
I'm fascinated by this. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's all been through exposure. I mean, the only
that's real fast track.
The only marketing budget we've given has been $300 a month for Google AdWords.
No kidding.
And what's the result of the Google AdWords? Any traction on that?
You'd be amazed, actually. We get a lot of traction from that.
What does it say? I've never clicked on a Google ad except by accident, I think.
I think it's, you know, video job interviews, save your budget, hire better. You know, we've tried a number of different iterations. A lot of people, you know, look for, say, video interviews, video job interviews, and you know, we come up in a lot of results and things
Keep
like
that.
Keep
it loud.
Oh, sorry. We come up in a lot of results. And, you know, the AdWords campaign has been really effective for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, and what about sponsored searches? Do you use that?
It's, you know, on like a Yahoo, that type of thing.
Yeah, or Google, where you come up on the side or at the top in that yellow square.
Yeah, so we've done that. I consider that sort of pay-per-click, AdWords, that type of stuff.
Uh-huh. What about organic searches then? Where do you come up in that?
Organic searches, actually, it's quite funny. You've heard a lot about video resumes in the space, and we're pretty anti-video resume in our business. And but people hear about it. It's got a lot of coverage. And if you look up video resume and video resumes, it pulls up about 10 articles on that front page from different sources. And in just about every one of those articles, HireVue is mentioned as the better alternative to video resumes. So people search these news articles or from about.com or ERE or whatever and find us. Organic search is coming. You know, it's obviously a land grab. You know, it's not necessarily competing against other video interview companies or anything like that. It's competing against Britney Spears video interview, Dan Rather video interviews, you know, words like that, because that gets linked to a lot more. So it's a bit more.
I hear Britney's going to get married to that photographer, isn't she?
I have no idea.
You don't know? Okay. Maureen,
I thought you didn't want gossip like that.
Yeah, okay, well, I can do it. You can't. Do you want to ask him another question?
I'm getting a lot of requests lately about business development. How do I get my business up and running? This is a fascinating topic for a lot of people, and I don't know. Do you have a blog? I should know.
We've done a. We're trying to do 2 to 3 posts a week now. You know, it's one of those things that we've done and stopped, got busy, but now we're devoting ourselves to it to really try to contribute to the community.
Well, if you could tell that story on your blog. A lot of people would be interested in it.
But, you know, he used to be partners with Ryan Money. Very nice guy. I met him here at last year in Toronto. Ryan came to play poker at Jason Davis' place. Now, by the way, yesterday was Jason's birthday. Happy birthday, JD. Okay? So he was here to play poker. How much business did you get from those poker games?
I'd say it was more connections. We, you know, as far as, you know, obviously it was great, and it's one of those, at the time it was Jobster from Jason over there. And, you know, it's definitely all about relationship building, and some at some point it'll turn into something. And, you know, but
okay, that's a no. You got no business from the poker games, right?
Well, you know,
they had a good time.
Yeah, they had a great time. And actually, wait, let me take that back. Jerry Crispin. He occasionally talks about us in different places and definitely helps us out there. So I was wrong. Sorry about that.
Yep. Okay, I met Jerry at that poker game as well. Okay. There's something that you said a minute ago that I want to ask you about. You are against video resumes, right?
Right.
Why don't you tell everybody why?
Well, for every 100 people out there, maybe one – maybe two people could actually create a decent video resume that represents themselves well. So there's no standardization, no structure, no bounds around it to really kind of put people on the level playing field. I think it has a place for you know, creative hires, you know, whether it's marketing or actors or, you know, things like that. Casting tapes have been around for 50 years. And actually, as a side note, you guys know Hank Stringer from It's Big, right?
Heard of him.
Yeah. He actually did video resumes back in the 80s in the backwoods of Arkansas with oil roughnecks. He'd videotape them, bring them to an oil company and say, all right, who are these guys do you want to hire? There's just so much, you know, you have to look at it for a few minutes. You can't just turn it off after 10 seconds, 20 seconds. And so I don't think they're ever going to really go mainstream in the sense that you have in your inbox 10, 3 or 4 or 5 minute video resumes to watch of candidates you don't know, they aren't pre-qualified for the job, and there's no standards to evaluate them against each other.
So your guys, hold on a second, because essentially what you're saying is that somebody might not be able to create a video resume, but maybe the same guy would be able to do a video interview, and maybe even it's a different person, because all the video interviews, as far as I understand, are with pre-screened candidates, not just whereas anybody can try to create their own video resume, only the good guys get to the video interview. Yes or no?
Yep, exactly.
Yes, okay. And then they walk into a structured pattern. They don't have to figure out how to create a good presentation. You create it for them. Is that right?
Right. You know, if we give them the structure. They give them questions to answer. You know, really make it so that all they have to do is install a webcam. They're not editing answers. They're not putting in stars and framings and music and whatever and or lifting weights, you know, whatever you want to see out there.
Have you seen that?
Oh, that, I don't know if you guys ever see, you know, I think we owe a lot of HireVue's existence to that Alexei Varner.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I saw that. That's right.
Because there was all these articles about his resume, and then that brought the topic up to the front table of, you know, how's video being used in the hiring process?
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, people trying to create those just doesn't happen, just doesn't work. And, you know, maybe I'll be wrong, and 5 years from now, everyone will have a video resume. But I'm going to place my bets on video interviews.
I'm with you on that one. I'm with you. Okay, now there's something about firewalls that can cause problems with these things, is there?
Yeah, you know, it can happen. I mean, if somebody has a really strict firewall on their home PC, they can, you know, they might be blocked. They might not be able to have their camera get through. And that'll happen to anyone. But, you know, then we say there's two chances before they start their interview. You know, do you see yourself? Yes or no? If you don't see yourself, call us immediately. And then we figure that out with them. Oh, it's a firewall issue. Oh, it's, you know, a settings issue or whatever.
What hours do you guys provide tech support?
24/7, actually. I got the phone call this morning at 4 a.m. from Belgium. So.
Oh, really?
Yep.
You speak Belgese?
Yeah, Belgese. No, it's we have foreign language support on demand as needed for depending on what projects we're working on at that time.
Does everyone speak English the worldwide?
We find a lot of our interviews are done in English just because I think since we work with so many U.S. companies, they want to make sure that they can, you know, communicate in English. But more and more, I'd say about 15% of our business is foreign language interviews. Whether it's Spanish is the main one. But French, Italian, and German are really close also.
Okay, so these companies, they come up with their own interview questions, right? Especially if they're in a foreign language.
Right.
Right?
You know,
you don't supply the questions.
We don't supply the questions. You know, we'll give input. We can refer them to consultants. We also can, you know, get them translated for them if they need to. You know, we have different things in place like that. But, yeah, they build their own interviews on demand.
Okay. Now, when we chatted before, you told me that they asked the question, what's your greatest weakness? I think that's a ridiculous question. Would you recommend that question to anybody?
I don't. I think that also is a ridiculous question. A lot of people use that, though, as almost a BS meter. I don't know if you guys saw Michael, but people in the U.S., there was this presidential debate a couple weeks ago. And one of the questions at the end, it was the New Hampshire debate, and it was the Democrat side. And the question at the end was, all right, if there's anything that you've said in this interview, can you take it back, that you could take back, what would it be, right? And the first person was Hillary Clinton, and she skirted around the question and somehow blamed it on Republicans. The next person was Bill Richardson from New Mexico, and he said, if I could take anything back in this interview, it would be the situation where I recommended the Supreme Court justice and just dived right into it, right?
Yeah.
He said, I would take this back. Barack Obama skirted around the question. John Edwards answered the question directly. immediately it's like, okay, yeah, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, on the, in that response, wow, BS. You know what I mean? And a lot of times people use that question for that purpose. If people take their greatest weakness and turn it into a strength, you know, like you get taught in college, they're like, eh, didn't answer the question right. I just want to hear, you know, hear them be honest and humble and say, here's my
greatest. You know, but Eva, but you had a better question. Just so you mentioned before, like, tell me about a time something went off the rails. What did you do? Okay.
Yep.
That's at least giving them some kind of direction, because you know they're never going to tell you, if they've got a brain, they're never going to tell you the time things really got screwed up and you cost the company $1 million. They'll tell you about the time, if they're smart, something really serious went wrong, but they caught it early and they corrected it, right? Because it happens to everybody, and you'll see, you know, what they learned, et cetera. But that weakness question really bugs me. It's not really fair to ask somebody, you know, to screw themselves, and they're not going to. They're going to say something dumb. I think it personally sets them up to say something ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, the weakness question isn't my favorite. You know, we have a there's a company out there called Mosey.com. It's an online backup company. Well, they're actually based here in Utah, and they're one of our first customers. And Josh Coates there, just a rocket scientist of a programmer, and he's the founder of the company. He just sold it for, you know, $70 million after his first year. Rocket scientist of a guy. He put these interview questions, because he was hiring technical people, of, if you were ruler of the web, what would you change? Or, you know, if you were in charge of this programming language, what would you like to see different? Or tell me about a project you did with this. Or tell me about a project you did outside of work that you really got passionate about. And, you know, ask questions like that that were a bit off the wall and a bit out there. But the responses he got were exactly what he wanted. He had 10 candidates and said, you know, if how would you do this, or how would you respond in this, or, you know, how do you do this? And he'd go through these 10 candidates, and six of them have no idea, or six of them give just an answer to him that was just bad. Two said, yeah, this is how I do it, or, you know, tell me, this is about the time I did this. And then two just nail it. And he's like, wow, perfect. Here's my guys. So I think, you know, with our clients, we just say, be creative with your questions. Obviously, don't be discriminatory. Don't be, you know, don't ask the illegal questions. But
let's go into discrimination. I mean, if someone can see what you look like, they know what race you are. Is that an issue? People must ask you that all the time.
Oh, definitely. But you can also see what race they are when they walk right in the door for that face-to-face interview.
Mm-hmm.
But in that case, it's even more so he said, she said, because there's no trail behind it and no tracking and no standardization that you can really be in control of.
Okay.
With a video interview, you have a standardized interview. All the candidates get the same process, the same questions, the same support, same equipment. Everything's there. So then if there is a problem that a manager is saying, listen, I'm only going to hire blondes in this case, if they only do that, you can be a lot more proactive and say, as a third-party recruiter or as an internal HR person or manager, and say, listen, Bob, you're being pretty egregious here.
Okay, it makes it more objective. It's not just between the manager and the candidate in a closed-door office. It's something everybody could take a look at and assess. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. You know, in terms of risk mitigation, a lot of clients, after they get over the first hurdle of, oh, I'm seeing a candidate, is that illegal? No, it's not. You know, it's an interview where the candidates are pretty qualified.
Okay. Let me go into something I want to – is there anything else that you have to discuss about that? I got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said that third-party recruiters are 30% of your business, like one-third of your business. I was shocked. You want to explain that to everybody?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, with third-party recruiters, there's the recruiters that use this on their own to screen candidates and make a better fit. They say, all right, I know what my client hires. You know, I know what type of candidates my clients want to hire and what sort of skill set and how they present themselves and everything. But I'm in Atlanta, the candidates are all over the country, and the clients in Toronto.
You know, you didn't block your incoming calls.
Yeah, sorry about that. I clicked out there.
Okay.
You know, but I'm in Atlanta, candidates are all over the country, and the client is in Toronto. So really you have two options. And, you know, Hedricks and Struggles and the executive search firms still do this. They hop on a plane, they go and visit every candidate, and then present them. But in reality, your usual recruiter isn't going to hop on a plane to fly all around. They're going to rely on phone screens. And when you submit candidates, your hit rate isn't what it really could be. I mean, if you had a better sense of who the candidates were and what they were about, and could compare them against each other and submit only the best of the best, I guarantee your hit rate will go up, and we've proven that time and time again with our clients. And so,
when you say hit rate, you mean placement rate.
Placement rate, yep. You submit three candidates and you place two versus if you submitted eight candidates and place one or two. You know what I mean? You can be much more efficient with your candidates.
Anybody out there who's on the line right now, any recruiters who want to take them to task or agree with them about that? Okay.
I have a quick question, though.
Go ahead.
What percentage
That's
of Yes, it is. What percentage of your customer base is third-party versus the corporate side? Is it a large group of people?
I'd say our third-party business, and I include RPO and third-party, is about 30%. A lot of it now is becoming corporate-driven, but they say, listen, if you're going to be a third-party recruiter for us, we want you to present your candidates on HireVue. We'll pay the bill. We'll cover the cost, but once you screen your candidates, put them on video interviews, and here's the questions that they need to answer. About 30% of our business is third-party driven.
Okay, now here's my question to follow for that. You just said that the third party, the contingency recruiters, get the client to pay for this. How do they do that?
You know, it with contingency, a lot of times it's more so client-driven. But a lot of times, there's contingency recruiters who are the only people on a search. You know, it's not necessarily straight retained. And that's where we fit quite easily. A lot of times if there's...
Okay, so you're saying that they won't pay for the placement until the placement happens. But the client is willing to put out, $1,500 if necessary to see the candidates to make
exactly.
it easy for them to assess.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, in the land grab situation where it's through a vendor management system or it's all local candidates, we do get used quite often there just because the cost per candidate is quite easy to digest. I mean, if a company has a camera in their office and they just put candidates in all day long and submit them, they'll swallow that cost. But
for a third-party recruiter, if they bring somebody into their office, if it's a local search, that only costs them $20 a shot, right?
Exactly. So they'll invest in it. But $150 a candidate, it's a bit more to chew, and generally that's covered by the client in one way or another.
Okay. Dave, any other questions?
No. Thank you for answering that.
I found that surprising, though. Did you, Dave? One-third of the...
So.
Yeah?
Very
okay.
much so. I would, it would make sense when you kind of put it in context that the clients are demanding it, but I am very surprised that there's that larger percentage of third parties that are using
it. Well, I guess they're selling it to the clients, client companies, and saying, listen, we can do a much better job for you for this minimal outlay. And if it's a local search, it really is minimal. Although, the location issue and time issue is relevant locally as well. If you're living in the suburbs of Toronto, it could still take you hours to come into the recruiter's office, do the video, and then go home. I mean, you'd have to take off half a day probably, unless you were close by.
Oh, yeah, or even, the candidate's local and the manager's local, but the manager's on the road for the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this candidate that you're just chomping at the bit to submit, and you can obviously connect them a lot faster through the video recorded video interview.
Okay. Okay,
Can I ask some other questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is this Dave Manister?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. How you doing, Mark?
Good, nice to finally hear your voice. We've gone back and forth on email quite a few times.
Absolutely.
I can't tell you how many people I introduce on this show.
Yeah, no.
Go ahead.
You're like Chuck Woolery.
Good connector.
Recruiting.
People together.
Go ahead.
My question is about actually competition from free services. And I understand there's a value add there when you're sending cameras to people and kind of preparing and archiving video. But do you see a lot of people saying, just we can use something like YouTube or do our own questions or just ask candidates, particularly in technical areas that are a little bit more comfortable with the technology, to just kind of do it on their own?
We occasionally find that. I mean, I'd say the free service that's the most competition is like a Skype or an MSN Messenger where they use webcams and do a real-time chat. In terms of YouTube, it's obviously not secure, not confidential. I mean, we are dealing with HR, and HR wants to have a certain level of comfort. They want to know that the company is going to be around. They want to know that their data is secure, that their data is protected, and for just about every contract we go through, we go through a legal compliance, an IT compliance check, you name it. And so as far as free services, you know, we find third-party recruiters use Skype quite often. But, you know, they do have to rely on the candidate having the webcam and being able to set it up. And some people just can't do it. But, you know,
but like Gabe said, the techies probably
right? Techies, yeah. We, like, for instance, the LDS Church here locally, they have, you know, 30,000 employees. Their CTO is an ex-Microsoft guy. You know, they're really quite advanced in their IT group. And they use MSN Video Messenger all the time to hire techies. So they just do it through that.
Dave, anything else?
No, thank you for answering the question.
Okay. Have I missed any questions that I should be asking you, Mark?
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
What about reference checks? Because, like, you know what? Anyone can say anything they want, but I really think that the crunch comes down in the reference checks. Do you do any – but no one's going to do a video reference check. You can't get people to do regular reference checks. But it'll be interesting. You could sure tell if they're lying easier.
Oh, yeah. You know, the question is, how long have you known the candidate? And, that would be quite funny. We haven't explored that as a business model.
Does anyone hire people on the basis of a video interview alone?
Generally, we don't recommend it, and generally people don't. What they might change is they do, say, you know, a phone screen with a recruiter or HR person. Then they do the video interview. Manager's seen the interview, you know, they see the person, they see how they communicate, how they present themselves. Then if it's, separated by continents or countries, time zones, whatever, and it's a time crunch to get the person in place, they might do a real in-depth phone interview as kind of the seal of the deal. Generally, we recommend that you always do one more interview after the video interview, at least,
okay.
Whether it's
face-to-face. So the person might get, like, three interviews, phone screen, video interview, and then face-to-face. Is that right? Is that the normal process?
Right, that first phone screen is what, you know, usually that 5 or 10 minute interview of, hey, we have your resume, let's verify a quick little bit of information, interested in this job, great, perfect, you're going to take a video interview. and then, you know, that third interview for the follow-up.
Okay. Listen, in the last minute, I'm just curious about you. You're a young guy, and you started this in college. Now, you had Ryan as a partner at the time, and he was someone who's older than you and had been out in the workforce already and returned to university. That's how you met him. But do you see yourself as the typical entrepreneurial personality who starts a business while in university, or did it just happen that you met a guy that you found you had sort of like a creative relationship with and that launched you by coincidence?
Well, I'd say a combination. There was a few things at the time. I mean, one, put myself through school running my own businesses.
I have my violin up for you already. Okay.
I had a few jobs here and there, but, you know, really, so I've always been really interested in starting and building companies, whether it's lawn mowing when you're a kid to, you know, whatever it might be. Then, you know, met Ryan, and we'd always talk about ideas and whatever. But frankly, when we both finished school, the job market here in Utah stunk. And I had two opportunities. One, you know, start a company with Ryan, or two, actually, I was studying Chinese at the time, and I could have gone off to Guangzhou, China, and help run a factory for a year. You know, and I was like, okay, what do I do? Well, the job market stinks here. I don't really have many responsibilities at this point. Let's go for it. Let's see if we can build something. And 4 years later, here we are, and I think we've built something. So,
okay, so you're not a fanatic entrepreneur. Is that it?
Yeah, I absolutely love the idea of being my own boss and building companies.
Uh-huh.
I would say there's some fanaticism for answering phone calls at 4:30 in the morning from Bell.
Yeah, but he's already in it. I mean, he would have taken a job. He didn't rule out the idea of
taking a job. There are
a
lot of people that won't do that. And that's what separates the entrepreneurial mindset, in my mind, from an employee.
Well, you could ask some of the guys that work for me when I have them on the phone at 11 o'clock or midnight, and I'm sure they'd like me to calm down a little bit, but we'll see. So.
Okay, it's exactly 60 minutes. You get the last words, or I'm going to kick you off and go into the next show. Do you have anything else you'd like to tell us?
Yeah,
Mark.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Do you want to sing O Canada with me or anything like that?
Yeah, let's do it.
No, another time. another time. It was great having you. Okay,
yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I have to tell you, I had a chat with Mark the other day, and I really didn't know how there'd be more than 5 minutes to discuss this topic. But in fact, I thought we had a pretty good discussion.
Well, thank you very much.
Sorry,
if you don't mind, one more thing, just because Dave's on the phone and Maureen and a bunch of these other people.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you guys all for all the coverage you've given us and help you've given us over the years, even if it was just mentioning us in an article, because it's really paid off. And
is there
really
any money in it for me? Here. I'm going to play your closing music.
People try to put us down in Papageria.
Make you feel good?
That does make me feel good. So
You're welcome to stay for the sourcing show, but I'm going to have to let Maureen talk. That's all.
Hey, that's fine. That's fine. I appreciate having all your help and all your support over the years, and we really are appreciative of everyone in the recruiting community.
Okay, great.
Well, thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks,
Mark. Again. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Okay, everybody, get ready for Talk Sourcing, the Talk Sourcing Show. I mean, the Telephone Sourcing Show. Maureen Sherrup and Pam Simon, who just signed on, are going to be open to answering all of your telephone sourcing questions. I'm just going to play Maureen's music. We'll get right to it. Okay.
Oh, Michael.
Is that enough?
That was an abrupt ending.
Yeah, okay. I've got a few different versions, okay? So
you can't do a slow fade?
Yeah, I could do a slow fade. I'll do it next time. So, everybody, that's Pam Simon.
And hello.
Yes. Okay. Are you going to interrupt me, Maureen? Maureen, I'm still the host.
He's
okay?
the host. You forget your place.
Could you let us know when you're going to pass the baton?
Okay. Well, I'm not passing the baton today.
Okay.
He's in control.
I'm going to be the core. Yeah, I'm in control, okay?
Okay.
Now, let me see. First of all, does anybody want to ask a question this early in the game? Did anybody call in just to ask one of these two girls a question?
Well.
I'm going to give you 5 seconds to speak up.
Do we have anybody on the couch, Michael?
Oh, yeah, but they're just listening. Mark is still there. Dave. Kingfish Manister, he's just going to listen in. He's not a sorcerer, but he likes to listen.
He likes to listen.
That, you know, remember, did you see The Gardener, the movie I like to watch? He likes to listen. Okay. Okay.
All right, then.
Pam, I haven't talked to you for a month. Do you have anything you'd like to say before I ask you a question?
Well, first of all, did you miss me?
Did I miss you?
Yeah.
Hold on. Okay, no callers. I'm sorry, I didn't. That doesn't mean that I didn't think about you sometimes, but I didn't miss you, no.
Well, that's not very nice.
Okay, sorry.
But other than that, we're just sourcing away.
Okay, great. So maybe you'd like to tell us, is that okay, Maureen, if I ask you guys to give us an idea what kind of projects you're working on right now?
Sure.
Pam, Pam, you want to start off?
Sure. We are we're in the midst of a very large, it's more like a research project that it feels like right now. Maureen, how specific can I be?
Maureen start off. Is Maureen still there? I think I cut her off.
Okay, I'll explain what we're doing.
Okay.
It appears to be several hundred names. It's in a particular kind of arena, and the arena is research, companies who do, you know, research for other companies. Isn't that funny? And so we have about 6 major companies that we're working on right now, and we're working in several different verticals. They want those who handle the sales side of it.
I'm having a technical problem. Maureen, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can, but I can't see. Usually I see. What line are you calling in on? What's your area code?
513.
Okay.
It came on and said that blog, thank you for, I got the ending of Blog Talk Radio, and then I went to
Okay, I cut you off by accident. Sorry about that. Your number doesn't come on. I don't know. I'll talk to you about that later. Sorry, audience. Back to, is Pam allowed to?
Do we have any audience?
Yes, we do. We
do,
yes. So is Pam allowed to discuss this? She asked you and you didn't answer.
Well, he wants to know what currently we're working on. I was kind of starting to talk in general terms on the big research job that we're working on.
We
and it's companies who do
We don't need to name any names.
No, no, we won't. But it's some of the largest research companies in the United States right now. That's what they do. That's what they sell. They do the research, and they are selling to other companies.
They're really worldwide, aren't they, Pam?
Yeah, they are worldwide. What's interesting, though, is we're working on two ends of it. One is the sales end of it, and the other are the folks who are actually doing the research, and they're looking. And
you know what? I'm totally lost. From your client is a research company, yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're subcontracting other research to you, right?
No, we're
actually doing the sourcing for them inside other research companies. Does that make sense?
We're looking for people in sales and for people in
research
inside of other
market
companies.
Oh, so they're marketing research companies. They're not sourcing companies.
No.
Okay.
No, not sourcing.
We're not there yet, Michael. We're not
now,
there
what's
yet.
What's interesting, though, is that within these large companies, even though we're tackling two sides of it, they have a specific geographic request on the research side, and then on the sales side, anything goes. So we're, you know, tracking down all the offices and the offices that closely, you know, that will work on the research, the market research side for them. And once we get all that information together, then we're going after, you know, what we, you know, we're sourcing inside of that side of it. And then we'll tackle the sales side of it, which could be all over the country, no matter how many offices they have.
The logistics to a job like this is very important, that you set it up correctly in the beginning.
Right.
And that's what we're doing. But actually, we've started the sourcing, haven't we, Pam?
So what do
yeah,
you
we
want?
Did start.
Pam, I want to talk to Maureen for a second.
Go ahead.
Maureen,
yeah.
What did you mean by that, the logistics is very important?
That you set the job up correctly. For instance, the customer wants sales folks out of specific cities or near specific cities because, the customer wants sales folks out of any city in the U.S. They want research people out of specific cities in the U.S. because they believe that these market research folks will not relocate as easily as salespeople will.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to delineate those two. We have to organize it. When I say logistics, I'm talking about organizing a job. This is a very large job.
Large in terms of the number of candidates you're supposed to bring in?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Hundreds.
They're looking to hire hundreds of people?
Well, they're asking us to find hundreds.
Oh, really?
They're looking to hire 30 to 50 different
people. Is that the biggest order that you've ever worked on at one time?
No.
Mm. No.
No? Uh-uh. Oh, okay. Okay. Anything else you'd like to talk about in that regard? Or?
Well, anyway, we were talking about doing phone banks.
Yeah, I just wanted to get the intro, okay? You girls, there
yep.
has to be somebody so you don't talk over each other, okay? And I'm that guy.
Huh.
I'm going to say your name. I'm going to say your name, and then you speak, okay? And don't. I think, Pam, it sounds like you're on a VoIP or something today.
I'm actually on my my headset, my phone.
Your regular Panasonic, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was curious, in case there weren't enough callers, I wanted to know something in detail about working phone banks. Now, there's two kinds. There's a few different questions, but just on the technical questions, there's two different kinds of phone banks. There's a phone bank you call in, and you can actually press the number sign, and it'll go through everybody on the list. That's usually with the smaller companies. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, either one of you. Okay, but the thing is, so you get everybody's name. To me, it's not as easy as you guys.
Most RPO providers are sales
wow.
organizations.
Who's that?
The core of
Nevada. I don't know.
Recruiting.
IPO no providers. Who put us on hold?
I'm guessing this. I'm going to hang up on. Sorry. I got to hang up on one of these.
Looking for a new career
wow.
opportunity? Wow. Because we offer our services to clients for much less.
You know what? I think
we
that's
can expose you
website.
To more jobs with more companies. Get your next opportunity at Nevotis.com.
Nevotis. Somebody listening to the show put us on hold.
Right.
Getting there. I'm sorry,
listeners. Someone from Novartis. They might be in Houston. Do you have any?
Reaching talent is
I'm sorry, Nevotis in Austin. Do you have any 512?
I've never had
marketing.
This problem. Maureen,
ask
I think
about
if
driving
if
qualified
to
candidates to your
else.
Open positions. Or developing your career.
Do you have any five? Anybody there
find
in 512?
Yeah, that is.
That's
or
the one.
Okay,
when
I've
we
got
respond.
A bomb. Boy, you're sharp. There. Hey.
There you go.
There you go. If anybody's still listening, Take it. A sorcerer knows exactly where the area codes are. Okay. Okay, unfortunately.
That's a good lesson.
I cut off Mark Newman. I cut off Mark Newman, too. I thought that was his company.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Anyway, okay, so we've got the phone banks. You go through them. You get all the names. Now, I think you've told me in the past, Maureen, that you can tell from the way people talk if they're sales reps or not. I can't. You can generally perhaps assume that certain women are going to be the admin people. I know that sounds sexist, but it's just reality. There is more female admin people than male. But I'm not clear on who does what just by listening to their names on the voicemail. Are you? What percentage? I'll start off with Maureen, then we'll go to Pam.
Okay.
What percentage of the time do you think you know who's who just by listening to them say their names?
Before I answer that, can I ask Pam if she agrees with that?
Oh, yeah. Do I agree with what your position?
You can pretty much tell. You can sometimes tell.
Yes, you can. Yeah, you have a better understanding. Yeah, I think you can tell.
Maureen, did you just dodge the question? Maureen, did you dodge the question?
No. You want to know what percentage of time I can tell?
Well, let's see. What, if there's 20 people on the names list,
mm-hmm.
on the phone banks, what percentage of them can you identify?
75% of them.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No.
20 is a very – here, let me say why. 20 is a very small office. Management is likely to sit in the early extensions.
Right.
The admin's likely to, or the receptionist is likely to sit in the early extensions. The worker bees are likely to sit in, say, extension 8 through 15, 8 through 20, right?
When
Pam?
You say worker bees,
yeah.
You're referring to there?
The individual contributors.
Like what positions?
Nothing in management.
Stick with Maureen. You guys can't talk at the same time.
It depends on what those 20 people are doing.
Okay, what kind of company it is, right?
Okay, let's say it's a software development company.
Right.
If it's only 20 people large, 20 people big, and that's a very small company.
Yes.
Management's going to be, you know, the president or CEO is going to be number one or two. The receptionist is going to be one or two, or his executive assistant is going to be one or two. The CFO and, you know, a couple other managers are going to be in the first five. And then from 5 through 20, it's probably going to be the individual contributors.
Where are the salespeople going to be?
You don't know.
In that 5 through
know.
20.
Okay.
Yeah, they're going to be in 5
but
through 20.
But they're not in any specific position like different
not usually.
To differentiate them.
Not usually, but sometimes they'll align themselves next to each other. So if you get three guys in a row saying, I'm not in, I'm on the road, but you can call my cell, that's a pretty good indicator.
That's an indication.
Okay. Well, Pat wants to get in there. Do you want to add to what Maureen said? Do you agree with her 75% of the time?
Yeah. And there's another clue, too, about management, is if you have a manager's name that you think you have, and you hit a phone bank and you hear somebody else's voice or a woman's voice, usually an admin saying, you know, Chuck Smith is unable to, you know, to get to the phone right now, but if you leave your name, usually it's an admin who's setting up her manager's phone. Or answering the phone for
you. You made me think of something else. Quite often, there'll be people. There'll be an admin who does everybody's names, right?
Not too often. Typically, just to the management, or just for management, or those who have an assistant.
Okay. Okay.
Or a department that may have an assistant.
So you guys are saying that the sales reps, you can identify them because they give the cell phones, right?
Many times. Yeah.
What about
right, or they have a backup name, you know, if you need immediate assistance, call so-and-so.
Okay.
Call my sales manager. You know,
right.
They
don't usually
like
give
that
information.
Sometimes they do.
Sometimes. You're saying 75% of the time, you can identify 75% of the people most of the time. Now, what about the inside mm-hmm. salespeople? Is there a special way to identify them?
What do you think, Pam? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
They might say, if I'm not in, try tech support, you know, something along those lines.
Right,
but...
or for immediate help, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just go through a few of the others.
But outside sales can say that, too.
Accounting people, there's any specific clues then for accounting people?
Accounting people?
Well,
many
times they're female.
See, here you guys are. We can't all talk at the same time, okay, Maureen?
Okay.
Don't make me angry.
Don't make you angry.
Okay.
Go ahead, Pam.
There's an issue here. You're saying that there's a few we can identify people by their position in the phone bank, That's one way. You're saying
management usually resides early in the phone bank.
Yes. Okay. So that's one way. Then another way is by telltale signs in the voicemail messages, the outgoing messages that give a clue as to what this person is doing. So I'm just running through some of the positions you said. You know, salespeople, they'll give you their cell phone number. Inside salespeople might refer you to tech support. Accounting people, there's no specific sign, right? Are there any other positions you think?
Well, accounting people, sometimes they'll say, this. They'll identify themselves. This is AP or this is accounts receivable.
Or accounts payable.
We're talking about people who don't identify themselves, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So are there
any people many times are female, if that helps to answer your question.
Okay. So, okay. Any other
clues?
3 out of 4
are female.
I think so. Any other clues that we're looking at that we can use to identify people from a phone bank?
Well, then when you get into the worker or into the individual contributors, you know, let's say it's a software development company, historically, and I hate to say this, but, you know, it's pretty male-dominated. Most of the voicemails will be male, and they'll sound like they're in their 20s or their 30s or their 40s. Not often. Well, of course, there are software developers in their 40s, but 20s and 30s, and you can kind of tell by their voice that they're kind of geeky or Pam.
Really?
Agree with that. Michael thinks I'm really way out there.
No.
Okay, Pam, come on in.
No, it is in the voice. You know, and I was sitting here thinking about all the you know, account managers or account executives or salespeople we're asked to find. First of all, those guys speak very clearly. They want to make sure you got their name. They want to make sure that you somehow can get them. Most of the time, if they're working on commission especially, you know, if the commission bases, you know, are pretty hot, you know, pretty huge for them, they'll tell you everything on the voicemail. This is so-and-so, you know, this department, software sales, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they're very, very clear with their customers. That's the first clue, is the confidence level in the voice.
Okay.
And
just let me clarify one thing. You guys are claiming that you can identify programmers from, first of all, let's say in this situation, their position in the phone bank and also by their sort of semi-autistic manner of speaking. Is that
correct?
Is that correct?
They're programmers. They don't have to deal with customers. They don't care.
Okay,
they don't want to deal with customers.
You don't have any examples at hand that you can draw upon, do you?
We have a lot of examples.
We have a lot of them. Yeah, just can't name the company.
Have you called? Well, I'm not asking for that, but have you called a company, a small company, using the phone banks recently?
Well, Pam just spent the weekend doing phone banks. The individual.
We have larger companies or smaller companies?
Huge.
Let me say something. This is like eating an elephant. You know, they're large companies, but they're broken up. They have small offices or smaller offices across the country. And many times those smaller offices contain both salespeople and research people. I'm talking about the market research job.
Uh-huh.
So you have to think about it in components. You know, you break a large job like this down into components, and then it becomes manageable. So
okay.
Pam spent the weekend calling through phone banks at many of the large companies, sales offices.
So
yep.
Give us that. But you knew that they were sales offices then, right?
No, I didn't know they were sales. Well, I figured there will be
sales people
there.
Yeah, they contain sales. They're their satellite offices.
Okay, so how
that are listed on their websites across the country.
Let me interview Pam for here for a second. Pam,
okay.
Was there a general size to the different phone banks you were working, or were they all
right? In some of the smaller. And some of the smaller offices, it came under what we call like an umbrella company. There was an umbrella company of which there were 20 other companies listed under the umbrella company or the parent company. And what I found is that they averaged somewhere between 20 to 40 people per office.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did is I just started. I found my target city that I needed. Inside, you know, these companies, and found a phone number, and then started calling over the weekend. Now, I didn't break out all, you know, 20 to 40 names in each company. I might get somewhere between, I might have done 10 per company.
Why?
Well, because first of all, I was in the need for speed. I'm, you know, trying to amass as much information and get a feel for it. And again, I was listening for a particular kind of voice or something left on a voicemail. something that I could use where I could call in directly come Tuesday, because we had a holiday Monday, where I could call in directly Tuesday, directly into this extension number, say that person by name, and get what I need quicker.
Okay, so you want to, so you were, in that case, you weren't going through the whole company and then looking at all the names you had and using some of the clues that Maureen mentioned before, position
right.
in the phone bank, and telltale signs. You weren't getting a full spectrum and
no.
trying to pick out the right guys from that. You were getting, let's say, half the names, and you're going to use them as a tool. Yes or no?
Yes, sometimes.
Okay. Well, what does that mean? Yes, sometimes.
What that means is if I happen to hit the right person by voicemail, and I knew that was who I, you know, if I knew
okay.
without a shadow of a doubt this was going to be my target,
okay.
you know, I stopped there.
Okay, but otherwise...
otherwise...
Michael, can I say something? At Pam's
yes.
level of expertise, she doesn't need to rip the whole phone bank. If she's got a 25% of the names or a handful of the names, she can get the information out of one of them.
Right.
Okay, well, hold on. See, you're jumping ahead, Maureen. So
okay.
she's either identifying the people. She gets someone's voicemail, and she said, this is the marketing manager I'm after. I don't have to do any more calls to this branch of the firm. But then with the other 10 names, for instance, that she's
mm-hmm.
getting, what's she going to do with those?
I'm going to break out the rest of the company live instead of
okay,
phone bank.
You're going to use those names how exactly?
Well, I might call into a name where I think, okay, this could be an account executive or could be research, or I have a feeling, based on what I think I'm hearing, that this is a person who might be supporting either the sales or the research effort that I'm working on. And then I will call that person. And if I'm right, you know, I don't have to do too much work. If I'm wrong... Very often, though, I'm so close, that person will ship me over to the right department, right person, right everything.
So you're looking for, let's say, a marketing analyst. Is that a fair title? What can we say the title we're looking for?
Sure.
Give me a title. I don't care. Even if
market
it's,
analyst. Market research
analyst. Okay, so you want a marketing analyst or a number of them. So you'll call one of these people who's you've ID'd their name alone and maybe a hunch as to who they might be. And you'll tell them that you're looking for the marketing analyst. Can you put me in touch with the right people? Is that right?
Basically, yeah.
Okay,
that's basically it. So you're using the names there. And if the person says, here's the thing, if it's a small company, Maureen, do you want to say anything at this point?
No.
We're listening.
Okay, if you're using those, it's a small company. Let's say there's only 20 people there. You call one person, they say, no, I can't give you any information, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You call your next name, right?
Yep.
Yes.
What if the person sitting at the next desk?
Oh, you're doing the stinking, Michael. Thinking.
So
but it happens.
It does happen.
Occasionally.
What do you
occasionally.
Do?
Occasionally.
What do you
they
do?
They might say, didn't you just call my buddy?
And I'll say yes, and
yes.
they didn't know.
And
you just go right at it, Michael. You hide in plain sight.
Well, come on. They'll say, yeah, Pam, I'm there with you. You'll say yes, I called him, and he didn't give me the information I'm after.
Well, he didn't seem to know, but maybe you might.
And
very often
they
will answer. Now, let me tell you another little trick, though. If you're doing this during broad daylight hours, you know, during working hours, and you figured out that there's sequential numbers, sometimes I don't find it too often anymore. In the smaller companies, you do. In the smaller companies, again, you'll do where everybody's in a cubicle and they have sequential numbers. But then you'll find large companies where you might be sitting next to one guy who's got a, like for example, his extension is 5616, and the guy next to him might be 5784. So in the larger companies, you don't necessarily have to worry about the sequential number system ringing the cubicle next door. But if you figured out that it might be that way, my suggestion is you do the first few numbers at the top of your phone bank, you know, like if it's 5602, 5603, 5604, jump down to 5625, and, you know, and you do it that way. So you're kind of throwing off that whole thing about the cubicle problem.
Okay, let me come back, Maureen. Don't try to, you know, push me away here just because you don't like the question that I'm asking. You call up. Let's say you call the receptionist, and she doesn't say, no, I don't know. She says, I don't want to give you that information. So then you call one of your other numbers, and it turns out someone who's sitting right beside her, and she gets pissed off. She says, that guy just spoke to me, just called me in. We told him we're not giving him anything. So what do you do in that situation?
It's never happened to me like that, Michael. What you're describing is a nightmare scenario. That
yeah, because the receptionist never has really more than one
guys
person.
You can't talk at the same time. Maureen,
right.
Please finish. Sorry.
What you're describing is, you know, every sorcerer's nightmare, but it just doesn't happen that way. As close as it might come, I might, she'll say, I can't give you that information. I'll say, thank you, hang up the phone, I'll dial another. I start what I call stabbing in. I start calling indirectly to that office. I call within the office. I know what their internal dials are because I've done my research. And somebody will answer the phone, and they'll suggest I go back to the receptionist. And I'll say something to the effect, I've already spoken to her. She did not seem to know. Maybe you can help me. It's a matter of controlling the conversation at that point.
And if you don't, go ahead.
Well, you have to control the conversation. If you don't, what I would suggest, if you don't have that skill level yet, just hang up the phone.
That's right, just hang up.
Just hang up the phone.
Okay.
Don't sit there and spin around in your juices and tell long, sorry tales, because it's only going to get you into trouble.
Okay, so you get two people who won't, let's see, the receptionist won't give you the information. The second person says, I heard you talking to the receptionist. We're not giving you that information. Will you call a third person immediately after in that same firm?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you don't think that it's so small a company.
No, not usually.
Okay, so
the
sooner
first
or later,
two might have been a fluke,
So sooner or later, somebody's going to give you that information, and you don't care if they complain to you that you're raiding that company, because they know something's going on, right?
Sometimes
they do. You're calling everybody in the firm.
If you're not prepared before you make that phone call, knowing that this is going to happen, and you're not, you know, it goes back to all the 101 lessons, you know, be in control of the conversation, be polite, ask for the person by name, or state their name first. Could you help me? Would you? Or I need to confirm. Or I have John Derrick here. Is he my account rep? Is he an account rep? Is he an account manager? Sometimes, if you're very controlled and you're very sure of yourself before you make that first phone call, you don't get too much pushback. You usually get cooperation.
So you run your names by this person and say, "I'm looking for the marketing analyst, and I've got Joe Blow, Mary Dean."
I might not run all of them. I might pick who I think it is.
Yeah.
And allow them to correct me.
Mm-hmm.
I give them enough time. It, you know, it just depends on how it feels when you can set it up any way. Sometimes you can just call in and get that person directly on the phone and say, "I just want to make sure the spelling of your name correctly. And are you the market manager or are you the marketing analyst?" "Oh, no, I'm the analyst." "Okay, thank you.
And believe it or not, Michael, they very rarely ask, "Why do we want to know?"
Even when you're asking, "I'm after the marketing analyst, I've got these names, can you confirm who's who?" And
you don't do it that way. You're asking for way too much. You take baby steps. You ask for one thing at a time.
Give me an example. What do you mean?
You don't say, "I have these names, can you confirm who's who?" You don't say that. That's a red flag. You say, "I have Joe Blow listed as a market research analyst. Is that his current title?"
Mm-hmm.
And let her correct you. And if she corrects you or she affirms for you, then you say, "And I also have so-and-so listed as the market research director. Is that his current title?" And let her correct you. Let her correct you or affirm for you.
Okay, so let's say you struck out on those two people.
Mm-hmm.
You're assuming that there's four people in the company that you
want.
But
we don't usually strike out on those two people. Remember, listening to a phone bank of 20 people, we can pretty much
figure out where we need to go.
Exactly.
That's
we don't
so
often
hard for me
strike
to believe.
Out early.
So you're saying that you usually go, after listening to the phone bank, you go in with the right people.
Usually.
Really? Pam?
Yeah. Or we get the right person who may not fit the description we're looking for, but we have the right person who's willing to tell us who the right person is.
Pam picked up. Didn't you pick up a couple mailroom names?
Oh, yeah.
Now, we haven't done
the
mailroom in a long time, but the mailroom is very, very helpful.
It's hard to believe people have a mailroom with email going on.
Mm-hmm.
But now let me ask you another question. We're running out of time. But let's say you're after a certain kind of person, or you go back to the marketing analyst. Will you make it your business to get the name of every marketing analyst in that firm?
if we need to, yes.
We don't like to leave anybody behind.
Okay, so you've got this list of people, and so you're giving them one person at a time? Is that what you're never, ever saying to the person, can you give me the names of your marketing analysts?
No.
You don't say that.
No, we never say that. That's asking for way too much, and it sends up their red flags.
So you give them, you let them, the salami technique, you give them a slice at a time. Is that what you're saying?
Right, and then sometimes you'll have somebody that will say, we'll just rattle off the entire department just to make sure you have it correctly.
Or you have everyone.
Okay.
You have
now,
so-and-so. You don't want to leave him out.
I feel I'm getting resistance from you, Maureen, on this one, but I feel like these are very good questions. You know what?
What?
We're out of time.
We're out of time. This is probably still being recorded, but I think we should end it
here. It's a complicated subject. Let's pick it up next time.
I think, yeah, and because we haven't even got to the complicated.
You're not getting
resistance
from me, but it's a very complicated. It appears very simple, but it's very complicated.
I had the feeling, I'm going to say it publicly, that you were thinking I was asking ridiculous questions.
No.
No.
Okay. No, it's hard to explain because it's truly like an art form. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. You do all
it's
your
It's an art form on top of statistics.
Right.
So there's science and art mixed into it.
It's an art form wrapped in an enigma, right?
Right.
Yeah. Contained within a conundrum.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to thank you, too, for your own show.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity, Michael.
You're welcome. And all I've done for you, you're welcome. I'm going to play the thunderclap, and we'll go.
Okay.